I'm Christopher Lydon with the social entrepreneur Biba Pinglay in the silk-spinning town of Ramanagar, 100 kilometers southwest of Bangalore. It's an old silk town looking for a new industry. We're here to see an experimental training center where about a score of women have come forward to learn how to fashion their own custom needlework at home, alone, but in a sense together, for a world market. This is open source from the Watson Institute at Brown University, an American conversation with global attitude, we call it. Biba Pinglay, so many agendas sitting here in front of us, including green, decentralized manufacturing and global design, training and empowerment of women, and simply jobs and income too, all under the heading of what you call Ubuntu at work. What should we be looking for?
The women learning and understanding to look for their own aspirations, thinking about their futures and planning for them, and learning capabilities that would help them realize those aspirations.
Who are these women, in short?
All of the women that Ubuntu at Work works with have a family income of about 6,000 rupees a month or less, which means that per capita in their family, they live on about 100 rupees a day, which is $2 a day. They have very limited education, probably fourth or sixth grade education. They may know how to read and write, but not really. They have some skills, but not really. And what they really are looking for is a space where they can feel more confident about themselves. They can understand what skills and capabilities they lack and they need to discover for themselves. And they are looking to reach out to the world to find ways of connecting with people outside their very small communities.
Have they worked before?
They have. They've worked in government factories in the area, or they've worked for nonprofits. It's been somewhat sporadic. Largely because life takes over, their lives take over, and they have young kids, and they have husbands or families that don't quite like them traveling outside the home for work. So they have worked, but in a somewhat uneven fashion.
Biba, how did they find you? How did you find them?
Well, we started the nonprofit Ubuntu at Work in Boston. And we then were looking for places where we could start local initiatives. And we found them in Bangalore, in Karnataka, in India. And we found them through our partner NGOs or through local microfinance institutions that connected us to a few women. And through them, we snowballed into now reaching about a little under 200 women. And hopefully by the end of the month, reaching about 500 women.
What's the big dream in India, in the world?
The dream is to help women understand their capabilities to gain new ones and to define their pathways out of poverty, to find them and to track them and to realize them.
I can't help thinking of Amartya Sen, the Nobel economist. If there is a silver bullet for the world's problems, it's this kind of thing, we're told. Training of women means population control, means fighting poverty, means human entitlement.
I completely agree with Amartya's arguments. It's heavily influenced my own perspective. I think the challenge is to understand what capabilities women want in a culturally defined sense. So what I try to do at Ubuntu at Work is to help women define for themselves what capabilities they need and to help them realize that. So it's not a top-down, someone saying that you need X capabilities or Y capabilities, or you should be able to play in the sun, or you should be able to go and work in a factory, or you should be able to drive a car, but rather to have the women define the capabilities that work for them in a way that empowers them.
Biba, what is the at-home piece of this?
Most of these women have young kids, or they have sick husbands, or they have other family responsibilities that make it difficult for them to work outside their home. A good many of them also face family restrictions on working outside the home. And what this means is that they really aren't ever going to be able to learn capabilities and learn the skills they need to break out of poverty, to escape poverty. So what Ubuntu at Work tries to do is to work with them to get them to help them come to a collaborative space where they can learn these skills, where they can begin to talk to each other, they can learn to feel more empowered, they can gain those skills and capabilities needed to produce for the local market, to produce for the domestic market, and to produce for the global market.
For an American stranger, what does it mean that almost half the women are covered?
It wasn't, as they themselves will observe. About 10, 15 years ago, they weren't wearing headscarves and they weren't wearing burqas. Yes. And so this is the new way of defining their identities. And at the end of the day, Ubuntu at Work is about giving them the space to define their identities and to grow them and to develop them and to aspire to newer and more entrepreneurial identities. And so be it in a headscarf or not, it's about defining what works for them.
For a guess, is it their personal choice, their husband's choice, their mullah's choice, the society's choice?
I think it's a combination of all of them. And I don't think they'd be able to separate what exactly their role in this is.
Okay.
Women, their identities are wrapped up in what the community identity is and what their family's identity is and so on. So they are never going to be able to say, well, I chose this or I didn't choose this and someone forced it on me. It's never going to be a simple answer. It's always a complicated answer, be it in Ramnagar or a small village in Karnataka. Their lives, the women's lives, are so interwoven with that of their community and with that of their family. So it's never a case of them saying that I don't want to wear a burqa and the husband or the father saying you have to wear it. Or it's never a case of them saying I want to wear it and someone stopping them. But rather, that's what the community does. That's their community. And what Ubuntu at Work is trying to do is say, well, you have a broader community of friends who want to connect with you, who want to reach out to you. And so here we are. We want to connect. And hopefully we can collaborate.
Biba Pingley, you're not a complete stranger around here. How much do you want to say about your own Indian-American connection with this project?
Well, I grew up in Delhi, which, despite all its wonderful advantages and scenic value and historical value, is a very hierarchical society. And I moved from Delhi to the US, where I was at Brown, and then I lived in South Africa for a year and a half. And I think both living in the US and living in South Africa really opened my eyes to societies that are non-hierarchical, societies that are a lot more egalitarian. And so my goal after returning from South Africa in 2000 was to try and create a nonprofit that would allow women to connect with each other, poor women, to connect with other women or other men, to connect and to reach out in a very egalitarian space, a very collaborative space. So it's not egalitarian for the sake of being egalitarian, but rather it's let's share, let's see what we can make, let's be this community that helps us all.
The teacher, the ringleader in Ramnagar, seems to be your deputy, Shaida. Would you introduce her?
Sure. I met Shaida last year through a partner nonprofit, Maya Organic. And Shaida, for almost a year, volunteered with Ubuntu at Work. So she helped us connect to these women to start our initiatives in Ramnagar. And she refused to even take a nominal stipend from us for her help. And she worked for us for free, in effect. And she all the traveling that she did for us, she did it out of her own money. And late last month, she decided that she was interested in working for Ubuntu now that we were seriously scaling up our operations in Ramnagar. And we, of course, were thrilled to hire her and to offer her a position in Ramnagar.
What is it you imagine these women producing at the end of a year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years?
Well, at the end of the first year, I imagine that they're a lot more confident and comfortable about even thinking about their futures, because they weren't when we first met them. So the first step is to just look to the future, to be willing to say, well, this is what I want, and this is what I'm dreaming of, and this is what I'm thinking of. And the next step is to understand what capabilities they need to make that happen. The third step is to learn the skills, very specific business skills, entrepreneurial skills, to then make that happen, to realize that dream. And we have a rather unique way of teaching these women these skills. We don't use flip charts or workshops and so on. And instead, we call it learning at work. And what that means is that we involve them in small production projects. And as they produce these products, we communicate to them what quality control means, what working on a schedule means, what being professional about their work means, what balancing work and home means, etc. So we try to communicate all the business skills and entrepreneurial skills that business school might have to do and might want to do in a very informal way. And of course, it takes much longer. It takes over a couple of years to communicate those skills.
I see silk dolls in production and ladies' bags. What's the end product going to be that'll make you famous?
The end product is these women starting their own enterprises. The women starting their own independent enterprises, connecting with designers around the world, using with help from Ubuntu, using the Ubuntu workspaces to connect with people and to make whatever products they want to make. Unlike many other nonprofits, we don't aspire to having these women learn how to become the best bag maker. None of these women were sort of woke up when they were 22 and said, I want to become the best bag maker in the world, and that's what I'm dreaming of. So, and we don't certainly want them to be forced to do that. So if they want to make bags, sure, they join our bag initiative. If they want to packet spices, they can join that initiative. If they want to make beads, sure. It's really whatever allows them to express themselves and at the same time earn a livelihood and gain capabilities and figure out what they can do next.
Can I put some of these questions to Shaida and maybe the women themselves?
Please.
Let's go into that workspace.
ಕೋಮಲ ಹೇಳಿದ್ದು ಅರ್ಥ ಆಯ್ತಲ್ಲ ಅದು ಎಲ್ಲರಿಗೂ ಅದೇ ತರ ಅನ್ನಿಸ್ತಾ ಇದೆಯಾ ಅದು ಸರಿ
Shaida, could I ask, a year later, after a year working with you, after years training, where is a woman in this program? What is she doing and how much money is she making?
There are different stages. Now we are giving them some orders like bag or dolls or something like that. They are just coming and doing. They are not connected with the end customer. So we were trying to take them in that process. So if quality is not good, it will not sell. If you are not producing in time, it will not sell. If you are not delivering in time, it will not sell. So those kind of thing we were trying to teach, make them understand how the market works. So those kind of a thing.
Many of the women had been used to doing two kinds of things, right? Either working from home and a neighbor or someone coming and giving them orders and saying, can you do this embroidery on the salwar kameez for me and so on. So they do it and they take 5 days, 10 days to do it and so on. But it's a very passive way of working. They're there, someone comes and gives them an order, tells them what the design should be, and then they do it. The other way that many of the women have worked, they've worked at various points in garment factories and so on. So they work, again, they're told, this is what you have to do, just do it, and then you leave at the end of the day. Right? What we're trying to help the women understand is that you have some skills, you have some embroidery skills, you have some sewing skills. We want to help you gain the skills to be able to do something by yourself. And be much more independent, be much more entrepreneurial in how you're producing and using your skills. Right? So you can produce this product. So we want you to be aware in 2 years' time, maybe not a year's time, in 2 years' time or 3 years' time, you reach someone sitting in New York who reaches you through our website and says, I want 500 of X pieces. Can you do it? And you be qualified enough that you can then send them a message back and say, yes, I can do it. And you then take ownership. So that requires managerial skills. It requires organizing skills. It requires skills of trying to understand what that quality control has to be. Because if Shaida is going to be explaining to everyone all the time what that quality control is, then the women aren't really learning to be entrepreneurs. They're just learning to be good workers. Right? And our goal is to get them to be independent, to start their own businesses. And to go and not just look for the local market, because there's really a limit to how many embroidery workers Ramnagar needs, right? Which is the classic sort of economies of scale and macroeconomic drama that micro-enterprise and microfinance runs into. If you give everyone the money and to start a small vegetable-selling business, who's going to be buying the vegetables? And what is the price that you're going to be able to sell the vegetables at? It's going to ruin that economy. And so the idea is to connect these women, give them the skills and the opportunities and the infrastructure to connect to people outside Ramnagar, not just in Bangalore, but beyond, so that they have access to wider markets and they can do the work that they're doing.
You are training women in fundamental skills of sewing and design on a plan to make them masters of their own craft in a way, and also of their own market down the road. Shaida, do you find that every woman can do it? That's a lot. It's a lot,
yes,
to aim for, really.
Of course. Every woman can do. It's a matter of developing confidence in the women. If they are able to understand their own capabilities, their own abilities, definitely every woman can run their own business in whatever field.
What support do they get at home from their men, from their parents, from their children, from their sisters?
When we have started working with women, it was also very challenging because many of them were not allowing their women to come out for anything, for training, for working, and they were not allowing, their brothers were not allowing, fathers were not allowing. So we used to go house to house, we were talking to their parents, we were talking to their brothers, and we were building a kind of confidence in them that we are not going to do anything with the women. We were just trying to teach a kind of skill where they can support your families in different ways.
May I say, it's a very interesting and varied group of women in the workshop right now. I notice some are covered, some are not. I'm sure everyone is a different story, but would you ask them, you know, in your own terms, in your own words, in your own life, in your own house, what do you want to get from this program? Could we take anybody who would like to answer, to describe in their own terms, and then you can translate perhaps, but ask them, what's the dream, so to speak?
ಏನು ಎಕ್ಸ್ಪೆಕ್ಟೇಷನ್ಸ್ ಇದೆ, ನೀವು ಏನು ಸಿಕ್ಕುತ್ತೆ ಅಥವಾ ನಿಮಗೆ ಏನು ಆಗಬೇಕು ಅಂತ? ಮೋಸ್ಟ್ ಆಫ್ ದ ವಿಮೆನ್ ಆರ್ ಡಿಪೆಂಡೆಂಟ್ ಆನ್ ದರ್ ಹಸ್ಬೆಂಡ್ಸ್ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಫಾರ್ ಈಚ್ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಎವ್ರಿಥಿಂಗ್ ದೇ ಹ್ಯಾವ್ ಟು ಆಸ್ಕ್ ದೆಮ್ ಓನ್ಲಿ. ಸೊ ದೇ ವಾಂಟೆಡ್ ಟು ಬಿ ಇಂಡಿಪೆಂಡೆಂಟ್ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಶಿ ವಾಂಟ್ ಹರ್ ಚಿಲ್ಡ್ರನ್ಸ್ ಫ್ಯೂಚರ್ ಟು ಬಿ ರೈಟ್. What she is facing, what kind of problem she is facing, that problem her children should not face. So she basically wants to create a good future for her children, being independent, being capable, being empowered. So she wanted to.
5 years from now, 2015, 10 years from now, 2020, what would they like to be doing? What would they like to be making? Where would they like to be selling it?
If they are alive till then, the main thing they wanted to see is their daughters should marry a good guy, and they should not live life how they are living.
What is the hardest part of their lives today that they want their daughters not to experience?
The saddest part of their life is the lack of finance, they are saying. And Komala was saying she wants a government job, and Manju was arguing for that. Even if a person has a government job, it's nothing, because her husband is in government job. He is driving government bus. So she is saying it's no use. To get a job itself, we have to pay a lot of bribe for that. She took loan to pay the bribe. And now she is paying interest. Whatever her husband is getting, it's going for interest. So she is saying it's no use. Something, we should have something where it's our own work.
Shaida, what does microfinance and loans have to do with all this? Has Manjula taken loans?
Manjula has taken loan, but not from the institution. She has taken loan from the local financier. There are institutions, NGOs, who want to support the women for different. Their thing is not only for business, for other household expenses also they will give loans, education loans, household expenses.
Do you worry, and do these women worry, that it's dangerous to live on loans and to pay 5% a month for a student loan is a very, very expensive proposition.
This is one of the big critiques of microfinance, right? Because it's asking people who have very little to take out that interest to pay for school, which the government should be providing free of charge anyway. So it's because the government is not providing that, you know, the middle class folks paid for private schools. But now it's gotten to a stage where even people who aspire to be in the middle class have no other option but to take out loans to send their kids to school. And that's the government should be doing this. It's sort of letting the government off the hook. Right? Because now the government local teachers will say, well, no one comes to our school. Manjula sends her kids to a private school. Ratna sends her kids to a private school. So, you know, no one comes here. Right? So that it creates another very vicious cycle that gets the state off the hook and gets people who are poor to begin with to pay for escaping from their poverty.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Thank you all very, very much.
So, the silver bullet of school training for women isn't quite simple or straight. A lot of these women are paying loan shark rates for their own or their children's education, even if they call it microfinance. But my other big impression from a morning in the Needlework Collective is that the quiet confidence they're after is palpably here now. There's laughter and warmth among these women that smashes our equation of poverty with unhappiness. These feel like connected, resourceful family folk with long experience at making do, no matter that we call them impoverished. I left their workshop wondering, is this why people say India will grow, but it will never have a social revolution? Paul McCarthy recorded these conversations in Ramanagar in the Indian state of Karnataka. Ben Mandelkern edited them at Brown's Watson Institute in Providence, Rhode Island. The game isn't over until listeners add their comments on our website, radioopensource.org. I'm Christopher Lighton. Thank you for joining the conversation.